Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our carol service, our first carol service since 2019. Welcome to the people sitting here in the church, and welcome to those joining us via the web camera. We're all part of one community here for the next hour or so. So maybe it's 2019 since we met like this. Maybe you turned around to one another and say good morning and hello and wish people a happy Christmas. It's good to be back, isn't it? Christmas is more than a date on the calendar. Christmas is in our DNA. Christmas is when we celebrate the return of light. It stirs in us memories of Christmases past, spent in the company of missed loved ones. Christmas is celebrating with the people we love. It is home and hearth. It is the laughter of children. Christmas is experiencing the presence of the divine in our lives. It is a time to create peace and goodwill in our lives and to spread that peace and goodwill to all the world. Our chalice lighting. When fire burns, it casts a bright light. May our chalice flame consume all our regrets for the past, our fears for the future, and our worries about today. May it light for us a path to joy and peace this Christmas. Now I'm going to light our Advent candles, and there will be four candles lit this morning, and these candles represent joy, peace, hope, and love. And then Dennis will be our reader with our first reading.
St. Luke chapter 2. In those days, a decree went out from Emperor Augustus that all the world should be registered. This was the first registration and was taken while Quirinius was governor of Syria. All went down to their own towns to be registered. Joseph also went from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to the city of David called Bethlehem, because he was descended from the house and family of David. He went to be registered with Mary, to whom he was engaged and who was expecting a child. While they were there, the time came for her to deliver her child. And she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in bands of cloth and laid him in a manger because there was no place for them in the inn. In that region, there were shepherds living in the fields, keeping watch over their flocks by night. Then an angel of the Lord stood before them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to them, "Do not be afraid, for see, I am bringing you good news of great joy for all the people. To you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, who is the Messiah, the Lord. This will be a sign for you. You will find a child wrapped in bands of cloth and lying in a manger." And suddenly there were with the angel a multitude of heavenly host praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest heaven, and on earth peace among those whom he favors." When the angels had left them and gone into heaven, the shepherds said one to another, "Let us go now to Bethlehem and see this thing that has taken place, which the Lord has made known to us. So they went with haste and found Mary and Joseph and the child lying in a manger. And when they saw this, they made known what had been told them about this child. And all who heard it were amazed at what the shepherds told them. But Mary treasured all these words and pondered them in her heart. The shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all that they had heard and seen, as it had been told them.
Thank you.
Sheila is our reader, and then can I ask the readers just to come forward, then they'll see themselves on the sheet.
Pagans and Puritans, a Christmas message from Bill Darlison. In the middle of the 17th century, Christmas was banned in England. In 1644, when the Civil War was in progress, the Puritan faction in Parliament drew up the first of several laws designed to outlaw the celebration of Christmas. The Puritans objected to the drinking and debauchery, noting that more mischief is committed at that time than in all the year besides. But they didn't just object to the jollity and overindulgence. The very name was considered objectionable. Christ's Mass smacked a little too much of Roman Catholicism, so they changed the name to Christ's Tide and confined the celebration to just one day, and that a day of fasting. What's more, there were real penalties for disobedience. Anyone found celebrating Christmas in the traditional manner could be fined or placed in the stocks. The Puritan opposition to Christmas has good rational foundations. Theologically, Christmas has no justification whatsoever. The Bible tells us nothing about the time of year that Jesus was born, and if we take the stories at face value, it seems unlikely that Jesus was born in December. Shepherds would not be tending their flocks on the hillside in the depths of winter, and no Roman governor would be foolish enough to call a census such as the one mentioned in Luke's Gospel at a time when travelling would be more uncomfortable and more hazardous than at any other time of the year. Christmas is not Christian, it is pagan, said the Puritans, and they are still saying it today, and they are right. Christmas is pagan. That is, it is a festival originally celebrated by those people who lived close to the earth and its rhythms. For them, this time of year would, since the dawn of time, have been a time of rejoicing as the sun changes direction once again and the darkness, which has been threatening to overwhelm us, gradually begins to lose its grip. Why wouldn't people celebrate? And why wouldn't they celebrate in all the various ways that still linger in our Christmas celebrations? With themes of reversal, of doing things differently, which are designed to mimic and to encourage the reversal of the sun on its journey round the earth. These pagan celebrations are expressions of joy, hope, and thanksgiving, which is why they are not inappropriate to the Christian celebration of the birth of Jesus, the light of the world, who comes symbolically to turn us from our descent into darkness and guide us towards the light of God. Part of me has always loved Christmas. I love the ambiguities of the season, the intoxicating mixture of sentimentality, nostalgia, generosity, overindulgence, madness, Christianity, paganism, secularism, fantasy, hope and concern, which highlights the joys and sorrows of our humanity better than anything else in our experience. Christmas dramatically demonstrates to us both our capabilities and our shortcomings, what we strive to be and what we sadly find it impossible to become. It illustrates the messiness of our lives in ways that no sermon, no drama, no novel even can ever hope to emulate. Why wouldn't we associate the birth of Jesus with such a stark reminder of our numerous human contradictions? At Christmas, I find myself both Puritan and pagan. Rationally, I'm with the Cromwellian parliamentarians, despairing of the excess and alert to the dangers. But emotionally, I'm with Dickens, another of our Unitarian forebears, who saw this season, with all its trivialities and absurdities, as a spiritual necessity, a time to loosen our belts and relax our brains, a time to relearn those two great virtues, gratitude and generosity. So, to the Puritan in you, I say, happy Christtide, happy non-specific winter festival. But to the pagan, I echo Dickens, happy Christmas, God bless us everyone.
Fairy Lights by Denise Blake. Hidden there in the muddle of boxes, of half-melted candles, wear-worn Santas and bright speckled baubles, put away last January, wrapped in air bubbles, wrapped in the memories of another Christmas, wrapped in hope for the new year. They are there, hidden in full sight, in the tangle wires, in the jumble of entwined green, in the jagged edges of broken lights, in the colours, blue, green, red, blue, green, red. In the missing bulbs and blank spaces, hidden in the mists of these annual frustrations. How impossible it will be to unravel these strings. How faint is the hope of these lights lighting. How time didn't unwind the wire web. Yet there in full sight is their message. Not everything works out the way we wish. Not everything endures. But there amid all that entangled mess is the glory of survivors. All the hope for the new holiday season. All the blessings from these gifts of wonder.
Hark the Herald, Hark the Hairy Angels by Robert Fulcombe. A Sunday afternoon it was, some days before Christmas, with rain, with wind, with cold winter gloom. Things' to-do list was long and growing, like an unresistant mould. Temper, short. Bio-index, negative. Horoscope reading suggested caution. O tidings of comfort and joy, fa-la-la-la-la. This holy hour of Lord's Day bliss was jarred by a pounding at the door. Now what? Opening it, resigned to accept whatever bad news lies in wait, I am nonplussed. A rather small person in a cheap Santa Claus mask carrying a large brown paper bag, out thrust. "Trick or treat," Santa Mask shouts. "What? Trick or treat," Santa Mask hoots again. Tongue-tied, I stare at this apparition. He shakes the bag at me, and dumbly I fish out of my wallet and find a dollar to drop into the bag. The mask lifts, and it is an Asian kid with a $10 grin taking up most of his face. "Want to hear some caroling?" he asks in sing-song English. I know him now. He belongs to a family settled into the neighborhood by the Quakers last year. Boat people, Vietnamese, I believe, refugees. He stopped by at Halloween with his sisters and brothers, and I filled their bags. Hong Duk is his name. He's maybe 8. At Halloween, he looked like a wise man, with a bathrobe on and a dish towel around his head. "Want to hear some caroling?" I nod, envisioning an octet of urchin refugees hiding in the bushes, ready to join their leader in an uplifting song. "Sure. Where's the choir?" "I'm it," says he. And he launched forth with an up-tempo chorus of Jingle Bells at full lung power. This was followed by an equally enthusiastic rendering of what I swear sounded like Hark the Hairy Angels Sing. And finally, a soft-voiced, referential singing of Silent Night. Head back, eyes closed, from the bottom of his heart, he poured out the last strains of Sleep in Heavenly Peace into the gathering night. Wet-eyed, dumbstruck by his performance, I pulled out a $5 bill out of my wallet and dropped it into his paper bag. In return, he produced half a candy cane from his pocket and passed it to me solemnly. Flashing the $10 grin, he turned and ran from the porch and shouted, "God bless you! Trick or treat!" and was gone. Who was this masked kid, Hung Dok, the one-man choir delivering Christmas door to door? I confess that I'm usually a little confused about Christmas. It never has made a lot of sense to me. It's unreal. Ever since I got word about Santa Claus, I've been a closet cynic at heart. Singing about riding in a one-horse open sleigh is ludicrous. I've never seen one, much less ridden in one. Never roasted chestnuts at an open fire. Wouldn't know how to do it if I had one. And I hear they're not a big deal anyway. Wandering wise men raise suspicions. And shepherds who spend their lives hanging about with sheep is a little strange. The appearance of a newborn king doesn't interest me. I'd just rather settle for a new president. Babies and reindeers stink. I've been around both of them and I know. The little town of Bethlehem, I've heard it's a pit, according to those that have been there. Singing about things I've never seen or done or wanted, dreaming of a white Christmas I've never known. Christmas isn't real, isn't very real. And yet, I'm too old to believe in it and too young to give up on it. Too cynical to get into it and too needy to stay out of it. Trick or treat. After I shut the door, came near hysteria. Laughter and tears and that funny feeling you get when you know that once again Christmas is upon you. Right down the chimney of my midwinter hovel comes Saint Hung Dok. He is confused about the details, like me, but he's very clear about the spirit and of the season. It's an excuse to let go and celebrate, to throw yourself into holiday with all you have, wherever you are. "I'm it," says he. "Where's Christmas?" I ask myself. "I'm it," comes the echo. "I'm it." Head back, eyes closed, voice raised in whatever song I can muster the courage to sing.
Let us pray. You are invited to have a time of quiet, to be quiet without and quiet within. Feel the stillness. Let the silence hold us. Let us let go of the distractions which plague us and find the deep peace of the soul. Let us let go of every irritation and all fears. Silence helps us touch our deepest feelings. In silence, we sense the deeper presence, that spark of the divinity which is in with each of us and which connects us with all of creation. May quiet be within us. May stillness be within us. May the silence of the soul hold us and give us peace. Thank you, Josh. Now, Josh has to make his way back down to the organ. So we will rattle our rosary beads while we wait. And we're going to have our carol, See Amid the Winter Snows.
Thank you. Corinthians 13, a Christmas version. If I decorate my house perfectly with plaid bows, strands of twinkling lights and shiny balls, but do not show love to my family, I am just another decorator. If I slave away in the kitchen, baking dozens of Christmas biscuits, preparing gourmet meals, and arranging a beautifully adorned table, but do not show love to my family, I am just another cook. If I work at a soup kitchen, carol in the nursing home, and give all that I have to give to charity, but do not show love to my family, it profits me nothing. If I trim the spruce with shimmering angels and crocheted snowflakes, attend a myriad of holiday parties, and sing in the choir's cantata, but do not focus on Christ, I have missed the point. Love stops the cooking to hug the child. Love sets aside the decorating to kiss the husband. Love is kind, though harried and tired. Love does not envy another's home that has coordinated Christmas china and table linens. Love doesn't yell at the children to get out of the way, but is thankful that they are there to be in the way. Love does not give only to those who are able to give in return, but rejoices in giving to those who cannot. Love bears all things, believes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. Video games will break. Pearl necklaces will be lost. Golf clubs will rust. But giving the gift of love will endure.
Good morning. Happy Christmas. My mysterious reading, which is only mysterious because I was indecisive, and I apologize. And I also only realized when I arrived here, takes the form of a book with a skull on it, so please don't be alarmed. It's from the fantasy novel Hogfather, written by Terry Pratchett, which takes place at their version of Christmas time. It's a fantasy world, and their version of Santa Claus is called the Hogfather. In this book, the Hogfather vanishes, and Death himself, the Grim Reaper, who comes for us all, takes the place of Santa Claus. This goes about as well as you'd expect. I'd like to read a short passage that is a conversation between Death himself, the Grim Reaper, who comes for us all, and his granddaughter, who is Susan. "Thank you," said Susan. "Now, please tell me, what would have happened if you hadn't saved him?" Death asks. "Yes," said Susan. "The sun would have risen just the same, right?" "No." "Oh, come on. You can't expect me to believe that," said Susan. "It's an astronomical fact." "The sun would not have risen." She turned on him. "It's been a long night, Grandfather. I'm tired and I need a bath and my bed. I don't need silliness." "The sun would not have risen." "Really? Then what would have happened, pray?" Death said, "A mere ball of flaming gas would have illuminated the sky." They walked in silence for a moment. "Ah," said Susan dully, "trickery with words. I would have thought that you would have been more literal-minded than that." "I am nothing," said Death, "if not literal-minded. Trickery with words is where humans live." "All right," said Susan, "I'm not stupid. You're saying humans need fantasies to make life bearable." "Really?" said Death. "No, humans need fantasies to be human. To be the place where the falling angel meets the rising ape. Tooth fairies, though? Hogfathers? Little imps?" "Yes," said Death, "as practice. You have to start out learning to believe the little lies." "So we can believe the big ones?" asked Susan. "Yes. Justice, mercy, duty, that sort of thing." "They're not the same at all." "You think so? Take the universe and grind it down to the finest powder, sieve it through the finest sieve, and then show me one atom of justice, one molecule of mercy, and yet..." Death waved a hand. "Yet you act as if there is some ideal order in the world, as if there is some rightness in the universe by which it may be judged." "Well, yes," said Susan, "but people have got to believe that, or what's the point?" "My point, exactly." She tried to assemble her thoughts. Death went on. "There is a place where two galaxies have been colliding for a million years," said Death, apropos of nothing. "Don't try to tell me that's right." "Yes, but people don't think about that," said Susan. She was thinking about her bed. "Correct. Stars explode, worlds collide. There's hardly anywhere in the universe where humans can live without being frozen or fried, and yet you believe that a bed is a normal thing. It is the most amazing talent." "Talent?" "Oh, yes. A very special kind of stupidity. You think the universe is inside your head." "You make us sound mad," said Susan. She was still thinking about the bed, though. "No. You need to believe in things that aren't true. How else can they become true?" said Death. "These mountains," said Susan, "are they real mountains or some sort of shadows?" "Yes," said Death. And Susan knew that was all she was going to get. In the finest Unitarian tradition, I don't even think I believe any of that, but it did make me think about things. So, happy Christmas. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone, and happy Christmas. Just before I read, I feel I should point out the contrary to your programme there. This was written by Paul Howard. Paul Howard, of course, will be known to many as the writer of Ross O'Carroll Kelly. It's a piece called Swapping the Labels. There's no doubt in my mind that the Christmas songs of my childhood were the greatest songs. The 15-year period from Wizards' I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day to Cliff Richard's Mistletoe and Wine represented a golden age of Yuletime pop tunes, if not a cultural high point for civilization. Every year I marvel at the power of these songs to reconnect me with my childhood. For example, Wham's Last Christmas brings me back to a cold night in December 1984 when my friends and I spent several hours collecting food items for the St. Lawrence College Loughlin Town's Christmas Bazaar. We walked the length and breadth of Ballybrack that night, dragging my mother's tartan shopping trolley behind us, knocking on doors, asking people to donate food items for the food stall. At the end of the night, we went back to my house and we laid out our bounty on the kitchen table. It was mostly tins of Heinz spaghetti spirals, yellow pack tomato soup, Bachelor's processed peas, Tesco brand prunes in their own juice, Del Monte mixed fruit cocktail. Then something so utterly revolting that I scarcely believed then and still scarcely believe today, the full Irish breakfast in a tin. The picture on the label inferred that crammed into this aluminium container were 4 tablespoons of baked beans, 1 thick slice of bacon that resembled my foot when I stayed too long in a hot bath, 1/2 a grilled tomato, 6 button mushrooms, and swimming in the tomato sauce, a tiny skinless sausage, looking wrinkled, pale, and apologetic. The fire in the kitchen was roaring, and it smelled of smoky coal, the good stuff. On the portable black and white television, there was a video for a Christmas song I'd never heard before. George Michael on a skiing holiday, mooning over an ex-girlfriend with pouting lips and huge hair, when we still believed that that was George's type. As we sat at the table looking over the dozens and dozens of tins we had collected, I had an idea. How funny would it be if we swapped around the labels? If we took the label off the pineapple rings and stuck it on the kokoliki soup? If we took the label off the peach slices in their own juice and stuck it on the salmon chunks in brine? If we took the label off the scotch broth and stuck it on the pear halves in syrup? So we set to work as quickly as our clumsy adolescent fingers would allow, removing the labels from each and every tin. Halfway through the operation, my mother walked into the kitchen and asked what was going on. I told her matter-of-factly that we were changing all the labels on the tins for the school bazaar. And my mother was a woman with a very strong sense of right and wrong. But she also knew good comedy when she saw it. She thought about it when I told her, and then she said, "I'll go and get you the good glue." The good glue was a tube of Evo stick that was once kept in the kitchen drawer, but my parents had taken to hiding it ever since looking at a Today Tonight special report about teenagers sniffing solvents at the Papal Cross. Having retrieved the glue from its hiding place, my mother committed herself fully, offering helpful suggestions as to which labels should go on which. Sweet on savoury, savoury on sweet. And oh, how giddy we became when we contemplated the likely reaction when each tin was opened. By the time we returned to school in January, I had forgotten all about it. Brother Fred, the first-year religion teacher who had been in charge of the grocery stall, welcomed us back and said he hoped we had had a nice Christmas. "I hope you had," he said, "a happier Christmas than the woman from Enel Court, who decided to make spaghetti bolognese on New Year's Day and discovered that her tin of chopped tomatoes was cherries in syrup. I hope you had a happier Christmas than the family from Ackle Road, who were served peas on toast for their breakfast on Stephen's Day. And I certainly hope that you had a happier Christmas than the woman from Ashlawn Park, who, in a hurry, late on Christmas Eve night, emptied a tin of fruit cocktail into the sherry trifle she was making, only to discover that it contained something so vile that I can barely bring myself to describe it to you. The full Irish breakfast in a tin." I don't know if Brother Fred ever suspected that I had swapped the labels, but I do remember the trouble he had trying to keep the smile off his face.
We're now going to have our offertory, and the offertory today is in aid of, all the money will go to St. Vincent de Paul Society, a worthy cause in these challenging times for many, many people. And while the offertory is being taken, we're going to have a beautiful piece of Irish traditional music, and our musicians are going to tune up now. That beautiful tune was Donaíche Uadhaí Meicheal, played by the Umuira and Ní Carthaigh family. So thank you for that. Thank you to our choir, to Josh, to Shari, to Gavin, for all the music, for the people who volunteer to come in and sing, to our readers, and to you all for being here this morning. It's lovely to be here with a crowded church. This time last year, someone in this church misled me and exaggerated Jane Meredith's age. And we sent her a birthday card, but she wasn't as old as that. But she is celebrating a special birthday this year. So can we sing happy birthday to Jane? We're going downstairs for fair trade and tea and coffee to the Damer Hall after this. There are cakes for sale down there, chutneys, there's honey. The honey is 100% pure Irish honey, and it has been scientifically tested, and it is the equivalent of Manuka honey in all its properties, and produced by Unitarian beekeepers as well. There's also lovely Christmas tree decorations and all kinds of things down there. The money from this sale of all of that is going to the refugee welcoming committee here. There's some copies of Uskult on the table outside and the other magazines. Please take a copy. Pamela will be here on Wednesday at lunchtime for a meditation service that's also available online. As you see, there are gifts underneath the Christmas tree, and we're still accepting those right up to Christmas Day. Those gifts are going to the Capuchin Centre, Brother Kevin's place, and you saw on the news how much these gifts are needed for people. So gifts should be wrapped, but indicate on the outside of the parcel the age, which gender it would suit, and don't forget it's men, women and children and teenagers. They're happy to take them for. Sunday, the 1st of January, New Year's Day, we're having our favourite reading service. This is where I ask people to be generous, offer to bring in some little reading you found or a poem or something you found inspiring and share with us. On the 4th of January at 7:30, the book club are meeting, and this month's book is The Enchanted April by Elizabeth von Arnim. And they start at 7:30, and there's a link on the website. So what's next on the agenda? Our final carol, Hark the Herald Angels Sing. Let's make it good. Our blessing before we leave. We have shared stories, sung carols, opened our hearts to the beauty of music. We have heard messages of hope and joy. It's time to depart, to return to our lives and to the world. May joy be your companion. May love be your strength. And may the gift of community dwell in your heart. And remember, for here in this place, you will always be welcome whenever you need. Amen.